So as David said, I am the new kid on the block. We've been here, me and Auburn have been here for about 9 months. But as David said, we jumped in immediately. Actually, on our way here in the U-Haul, I got a phone call from the guy who was covering my class for like 2 weeks when I got here so I could ease into it. He called me and said, "Hey, my son has a huge compound fracture in his arm. It's on you." And I said, "Well, I am in a U-Haul right now. I don't know. It's a Saturday. Church is on Sunday. But I got here Sunday, was welcomed with open arms, taught class, everything went well. But we jumped in with both feet. We immediately started working. Before we jump into this lesson, I want to ask you a question. And the question is I want you to think of a time when or where someone invested time into you. When you think of a time where someone invested time in you, what did they do? How did it affect you? How did it make you feel? Did it make you the person that you are today? How did it mold you? I want you to think of these times where someone invested time into you. And Cody mentioned this, and he talked about discipleship. And I want you to think along the lines of that. I have a few stories in where someone invested time in me. I think of my grandfather. I called him Papa. He was my buddy. Me and him were, everywhere he went, I was following right behind him. My grandfather worked security at nursing homes. And they didn't care if I went along. I was a pretty well-behaved kid. So we're sitting in this, I guess, room, security room. And my grandfather asked me, he said, "Do you know who God is?" And I said, "Yeah. He's like our Father in heaven." And he said, No. Do you really know who God is? Do you know who Jesus is? Do you know the stories?" I didn't grow up in the church. I didn't grow up going to Sunday school every Sunday. I didn't grow up going to worship every Sunday or Sunday night or every Wednesday night. So I didn't. I didn't know that answer. I was around 10 at this age, 10, 11, and I remember it to this day. But that question of do you really know who Jesus is stuck with me, and it sticks with me to this day. 3 years later, I call my grandfather. He lived in Auburn. I lived in Birmingham, and I said, "Can you baptize me?" And you could hear the crying over the phone and the tears welling up in his eyes. You could hear the emotion, and he said, "Of course, son." So we drove to Auburn. We got baptized at a church that I'll talk about in a second. And he baptized me, and he helped me. Now, as any teenager as you've ever met, they sometimes are baptized and they fall away immediately. And that was the case for me. I went back home. My family didn't attend church. They maybe once on Easter, maybe once at Christmas time. But they were never consistent. So I never had that consistency in my life. So I fell away from the church. I fell away from God. My grandmother, my grandfather's wife, she did mission work all over the world. She helped start a mission work in Taiwan. My grandfather helped start mission work in Russia. And my grandmother, they had been going to Oradea, Romania for the past like 10 years. And I remember them, they would always bring us gifts. They would always bring us a souvenir. They had these secret boxes. I remember vividly the secret box where you would move something over and then something else would happen. There was a key inside and you could put a little trinket or you could put a little dollar in the box. And they would always bring us these boxes when we were growing up. And I said, "Nan, I want to go on a mission trip." I'm 15. Just turned 15. She said, "Okay, let's go." So, loaded me up on a plane for 8 hours, went to Romania. I didn't do anything. It was more of an experience. I wanted to understand. I loved it. I fell in love with the country. And I told her, I said, "I want to come back next year. I want to come back next year. I want to do what you're doing." They were teaching English using the Bible. They were going out into these little villages and teaching English. If you know English in a different country, you get the better jobs. You get more experience. You get more opportunity. So people were just wanting to learn English. And so we took that opportunity and we taught them the Bible. So I went back the next year. I think I'm 16. And I'm teaching English using the Bible. She invested that time in me. I get back. I'm 16 now. My family in Birmingham, they're still not really going to church. And I was going back to my old ways of just doing whatever I wanted to do. Well, when I turned 16, I got my license, as any 16-year-old does. I drove a Volkswagen Jetta. It was diesel. It was awesome. I got like 42 miles to the gallon. And I said to myself, and I was sitting in my room, and I said, Blaine, what are you doing with your life? What are you doing with your life? And I come up with the conclusion of, I'm not doing anything with my life. I'm going to school. I'm doing the typical school things. I'm trying to go to college in a couple years. I want to study computer programming. That was what I wanted to study. And then I realized, I said, there's so much more than just me in this world. There's so much more than me. And it's not about me. And so I turned 16, got my license, got my car, and I drove to a little church, little country church, Helena Church of Christ, maybe 75 people by myself. And I sat in a pew by myself in the back, lost. I didn't know what it meant to go forward. I didn't know what it meant to ask for help until a little old lady named Sue came up to me and she said, I've never seen you here before. I said, yeah, this is my first time, second time coming here. Just trying to, she asked me how old I was. I was like 16. She was like, your family's not here? I said, no. She said, why don't you sit with me? And I said, no, you have your pew. You sit with your family. She said, no. You sit with me. You don't sit back here by yourself. You don't sit there by yourself. You sit with me. You sit on the same pew that my family sits at, and you can sit right next to me. This little old lady, she hit me about right here, and she was the strongest woman I've ever met. This is the same woman that encouraged me to pursue a higher education, because at that time I didn't really know if I wanted to do that. She was the one that convinced me to pray publicly for the first time. She was the first one to at least ask me to lead singing, because at the time I wouldn't even attempt that, because I didn't like that. She was the first woman to encourage me to do a Wednesday night Devo, a little 5-minute devotional. And let me tell you, I stressed more about that than any other time in my life, because I didn't know how it was going to go. And I sat on the front row like the preacher did, thinking I was going to give this 20-minute sermon. And I spoke for maybe 2.5 minutes. But she encouraged me. She came up to me afterwards and hugged my neck. And she said, I love you. I'm proud of you. And you can do more. She continued to say, you can do more than what you're doing. Miss Sue invested in me. The 16-year-old kid who sat in the back pew at a church of about 75 people, she invested her time in me. So I fast forward to Faulkner. Had a really good time at Faulkner. I was very involved, and the first year comes and internship time comes. If you've ever worked at a church, you know, usually there's an intern. You usually have a youth intern, a college intern, usually maybe a preaching intern. And I went to this internship fair at Faulkner. And I talked to about 15 youth ministers and 2 elders. And they interviewed me and they were asking me, hey, where are you from? And I was like, well, I'm from Birmingham. How long have you been a Christian? And I was like, well, I was baptized at 13, but I didn't really start acting like a Christian until a couple years ago. And they would just pass me by. We'll go on to the next guy. Until a church in Columbia, Tennessee took me under their wing, and a youth minister of the name of Malvin Sanders mentored me. And the first question that he asked me when I got to Highland was, why do you do what you do? And I didn't know how to answer that question at the time. And so the summer goes, I had an incredible summer. They encouraged me to pursue youth ministry, because at the time I wanted to pursue overseas mission work, because that's all I knew. But it encouraged me to take on youth ministry. I saw a need in young people and to minister to them. And Malvin asked me at the end of the summer, he said, why do you do what you do? And I said, because I want to glorify God. So it's not about me. God's just using me in his work. But Malvin, Highland, that entire church invested their time in me and molded me to who I am today as a minister. I'm 22. I'm the young guy, and I get that. We have a parent here that tells me I have an old soul. I don't know what that means. But he says, I have an old soul. I get it. Now, it's a learning experience. Don't get me wrong. But you got to get it. So the topic that we have is involving our members in service. My first point is we have to invest in Jesus, and we have to invest in his people. Just like Miss Sue, you could be that person that shows someone Christ. You could be that person that shows someone that they have the ability to do more than what they're currently doing. We get very caught up in what goes on in these walls. We get very caught up in what happens here. There's so much more that is going on throughout the world. As a youth minister, I talk to young people all the time, and I emphasize this, is whatever you do when you're talking to someone about Christ, don't worry about what they look like. Don't worry about how they talk. Don't worry about where they come from. Minister to them. Y'all go to Matthew chapter 13, parable of the sower. I'm going to read it really quickly, and we'll talk about it. It says, the same day Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea, and great crowds gathered about him. So they got into a boat and sat down. The whole crowd stood at the beach, and he told them many things in parables, saying, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seeds fell along the path. The birds came and devoured them. Other seeds fell on rocky ground, where they did not have much soil. They immediately sprang up, and since they had no depth of soil, when the sun rose, they were scorched. When they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and produced grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. He who has ears, let him hear. This was a passage that I read a lot in college because I wanted to challenge myself. I wanted to do more. I know sometimes people are scary. I get that. I live in a generation where nose piercings and huge gauges in your ear is a very normal thing. And sometimes those people can be very frightening to talk to. Don't worry about what they look like. There was a lady, before I went to Faulkner, I worked at a store that most of y'all are probably really familiar with. It's called Hobby Lobby. I was a stockman. I was also, as Auburn dubbed the name, I was head tree boy. I went and got all the Christmas trees. That was like my job. But my main job was I swept the store and I cleaned the bathrooms and I did all the dirty work that no one else wanted to do, which is fine. I got paid, so that's all I cared about, to put gas or diesel in my diesel Jetta. But I walked around every night. I worked night shifts because I was in school still. And there was this lady, her name was Miss Lita. And if you were here last Sunday night at Creekwood, you've heard this story. But there was this lady in the frame shop, Miss Lita. Now, working at Hobby Lobby, you work with some strange people. If you've ever worked retail, you work with some different people. Well, Miss Lita was no, like, excuse to this. She was a very strange person. You would walk by and she would make a weird noise. And like you would continue walking and ignore that she had just made that weird noise. But we had a 30-minute lunch break, and I decided, I was like, okay, I'm just going to talk to this lady, this strange lady in the frame shop. And I found out a lot about her. Miss Lita was a recovering meth addict. She had about 3 teeth, and she didn't have her dentures in. She had a Jeep that barely ever ran. I actually had to buy a lot of parts that went on that Jeep to make it run. I had to pick her up sometimes from work, take her home. She was, what you would say, struggling. She was struggling. And no one wanted to take the time with Lita because she was different. So I sat down with her. I said, hey, Miss Lita, what's up? She said, nothing. I'm struggling with an addiction, which was methamphetamine, which if you know anything about addictions, it's one of the worst, one of the hardest to overcome. But I looked at Miss Lena and I said, okay, well, we're going to be friends regardless of what you say because I'm a friendly guy and I want everyone to like me. That was just a character trait about me. I don't like when people are mad at me. But I had Lita who wouldn't talk to me. She wouldn't talk to anybody. And I took the time and I talked to Lita. I got to know her. I worked there for almost a year. And around 6 months of working there, I had known Lita for really only 3. Lita had a dog that I was very familiar with, and it was a German Shepherd of 18 years. Lita didn't have a family. Her parents had passed away. She didn't have any kids. She never had a husband. But she had this dog, this 18-year-old German Shepherd that she loved with her whole heart. And that German Shepherd had to be put down while I was working there. And I've seen defeated people before, and I've seen people that are like really struggling in life. But when you looked at Lita, there was nothing in her eyes. That was all she had. That was it. That 18-year-old dog was all she had. That was her baby. And she lost it that day. And she was crying. She still had to come into work because she had to pay bills. And at our lunch break, we usually always had lunch at the same time, and I put my arm around her, and I just prayed with her. I prayed with her. The strange person that I met 3 months ago that wouldn't talk to anyone, who's now struggling in life to continue moving forward, I prayed with her. I asked her, hey, I get you're struggling right now, but do you know what will help you? What will help you through this hard time? She said, nothing. And I said, no, Jesus will help you. I had a Bible study that day. There was a lot of tears and a lot of emotion in that Bible study. And it was an awkward Bible study, if you want me to tell the whole truth. It was very awkward. But she kept asking for these Bible studies. She kept reaching for something to grab onto that would help her cope with this loss. I moved to Faulkner. I'd been doing that for a couple months. She ended up having Bible studies just on her phone with like apps and stuff. A year ago, Lita was baptized. She's at that same little country church that I started at when I was 16. Hopefully sit next to Miss Sue. But I invested time in her. I invested time in Jesus because I knew that's what she needed. Sometimes we get caught up in the seed. We get caught up in the soil that is in front of us. We get caught up in what a person looks like or how they talk or where they come from. Instead, why do we need to worry about that part? We need to be worried about the message that we're bringing to these people, regardless of what they look like, regardless if they got 18 piercings and 35 tattoos. Maybe they talk a little funny. But I encourage you, don't worry about what they look like. I work with teenagers. Teenagers are weird. Andrew, you know, teenagers are weird. But you minister to them anyways. They're the future of the church. That's what we're going to have after we're gone. But we invest time in Jesus and in his people. Matthew 28, and Cody hit on it a second ago. Encourage your members to just go out. Go out. Matthew 28, verses 16 through 20, it says, "Even now the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountains in which Jesus had directed them. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. And Jesus came and said to them, 'All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit.'" Don't worry about where you got to go. Go and do it. As Cody mentioned, we did a door knocking campaign. And I encourage the teenagers to step out of your comfort zone. And I know you've probably heard that before. But I encourage that these teenagers, and we were with in this door knocking campaign. It was me, Auburn, and a little 13-year-old girl named Addison. If you know Addison, she's a very loud person. She's a very energetic person. You've probably heard her. If you go on Sunday nights, you probably hear after everything's over screaming in the lobby. It's just her. I love her to death. But we're in this, we're door knocking, and door knocking for teenagers is the most awkward thing in the world because you have to talk to strangers, right? For anyone who's sitting here, you have to talk to strangers, and that's awkward. But Addison took a whole different approach to this. She tried to knock on the door so hard that she tried to knock it down. Yeah, she's like this tall, guys. She's little bitty. But she was so enthusiastic about the work that she was doing that she, I mean, like police, like trying to break the door in. "I need to talk to you, sir," or Blaine does. Blaine knows the stuff. But she stepped out of her comfort zone and encouraged me, which we struggle too as ministers. We need to be encouraged. And that was encouraging from a 13-year-old little girl who's trying to knock doors down in a door-knocking campaign in the neighborhood that her church is right next to. Step out of your comfort zone. Jesus ate with sinners. He hung out with tax collectors, hung out with thieves. All for what? So they can find God. They can find his Father. And they can get to heaven one day. Jesus was stepping out of his comfort zone from day one. He was going out of his way from day one. He was doing things that no one else would do. Tax collectors were hated. They were despised by the community. But they need Jesus just like the other person does. Encourage your members to have that mentality. Now, go back to Addison, and this is my next point, is be on fire for God. Be on fire for God. Like Addison knocking that door down, or at least attempting. She was on fire for God. We have a member here at Creekwood. He wears a bow tie every Sunday, and I love him to death. And he was talking about he did some of the children ministry classes here. And we have our curriculum, but he would go and immediately would go through the books of the Bible. He would sing the songs. Everyone knows the songs. But then he would ask questions. And he would encourage these little kids. These little kids would then go home and ask their parents to sing the song with them. Aren't we the same way? When you see someone who's excited about God, don't you want to take that next step and continue what they're doing? I think of a snowball effect. If you throw a snowball down a hill, it's going to get bigger and bigger. But it takes that one person to throw that snowball down the hill, right? That needs to be us. We need to initiate that snowball effect. And be on fire for God. I tell the teenagers, and I bring them up often as I love them to death, but we ask them is, are you going to talk to someone that you've never talked to before or you've never known? Answer is usually no, obviously. Blaine, why would I talk to a stranger when I have friends I can talk to? I said, we're supposed to make friends, right? You're supposed to go out and step out of your comfort zone and make these friends with these, I mean, and a Mobile Christian, make friends with teenagers maybe that you've never sat with before. Because they're going to be more receptive to talking about God than a stranger would be. And you think of your best friend, maybe that you've worked with for the past 20 years, that you know everything about them, you know their family, you know their kids, you know like their favorite sport, their favorite team. Do we talk to them about God? As Cody mentioned, do we know our neighbor? Do we know our best friend? Do we know the person that we've confided in? In little things in life. When I was at Faulkner, there was this student at Del Rey, the church that I attended there. His name was Daniel Moore. If you ever heard of Daniel Moore, he's this very energetic guy. He's very out there, loving. Daniel has encouraged me in many ways. Daniel's not, he can't drive. He has special needs. But his Bible knowledge is there. Physically, he can't do much. Mentally, he's there. Daniel was on fire for God every time he entered the building. Daniel walked to church most Sundays and Sunday nights and Wednesday nights in the rain and then 100-degree weather. Daniel was there. He didn't have a phone. He didn't have a bus pass. He walked there until I've got some people there now that pick him up and take him to church and take him to events and etc. But he walked there. He was on fire for God no matter what. He went out of his way to do that. Daniel reminds me of this passage in James chapter 4 in verse 14. And it says, "Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes." A mist. You don't have much time. And that's really hard to say because I'm only 22. But the time that I do have can be glorifying God. Be giving Him that fire. Giving Him that investment. The discipleship, going out into all nations and showing this love that Jesus has for us. And my last point, I don't know how much time I have left. Show Jesus and His love and people will follow you. You're all familiar with 1 Corinthians chapter 13. I'm going to read it for you. And just listen. I don't even want you to open up your Bibles. I just want you to listen. It says, "If I speak in tongues of men and of angels but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have and I have delivered up my body to be burned and have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoings, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part. But when the perfect comes, the partial will pass away." This is the verse I want to focus on. It says, "When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. And when I became a man, I gave up childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but the face to face now. I know in part, and I shall know fully. Even as I have been fully known. So now faith, hope, and love abide these three, but the greatest of these is love." Guys, we got to get over ourselves. It starts with you. We can have these campaigns. We can have these events. We can have these things going on all the time. But if you're not there, no one is. No one is. Put away childish things. It's really easy to focus on. I'm a huge Auburn fan, and I'm not just saying that because I'm married to her, but I'm a huge Auburn fan. I've been an Auburn fan my whole life. My dad's got this Auburn tattoo on his calf, which is, calf tattoos are horrible. But he had this, we just loved Auburn football. And we didn't ever stop talking about it. Auburn plays Alabama today. My dad's already texted me before I even woke up. I woke up at 5:30. He's like, "Hey, War Eagle." I'm like, "Yeah, War Eagle." See, there we go. But we focus so much on the things that don't matter. It's really fun. I get that. Football, I mean, it's one of my favorite sports. Basketball is my favorite sport. But it's really fun to focus on that. But sometimes we get lost in it. Sometimes we get lost in the fun things. I think of our youth minister meetings sometimes can get a little sidetracked, I would say. And we sometimes will lose focus on what the meeting's about. And I'm to blame there. I like to have fun. But when we really sit down and talk about what needs to get done, it gets done. When we sit down and we really think about, okay, hey, what do we need to do? What's camp going to be like this summer? What area-wides are we going? What's our theme this summer or this next year for area-wides? What are the retreats that you're doing? What are some materials that you've got coming on? What are some things that we can pray about? And that's when things get serious. That's when we put away those childish things like that. Encourage your members to put away childish things. In my life, I've struggled with a lot of things. I've struggled with accepting God. But it took those people that invested in me to encourage me, to help train me to be the person that I am today. So those people who were on fire for God, who got me into service, who got me out in the field and doing something about it. But ultimately, it took the love of Jesus to get me where I am today. Encourage your members, those three things. Encourage them to invest in someone. Be on fire for God, because they're going to follow you if you are. And ultimately, love.